Thank you. As well said, my name is Yara Schwalski, and I'm the project director for the NLS standards revision for the Library of Congress Network of Libraries for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. And so I'm going to just give sort of an overview of the sort of history, where we started, and what's coming next with the revision process, and then which is wrapping up this end of June, or at least before October. And then I'll talk a little bit about some of the major changes that came with the second draft, which is the draft that's out right now. And so everyone should have, at least anyone who's on the LBPH listserv, the ASCLA listserv, it's also on the ASCLA blog, should have seen the draft. If you haven't, we can make sure that you have access to it so you can review it and then ask questions at a later date if you'd like. But a little bit about me, I actually used to work for the Washington Talking Book and Braille Library, so I was very excited to see that they got Network Library of the Year again, and I was there the first time that they received that honor. And I am now at the University of California, Santa Barbara, and I work in the IT world and miss libraries a lot. So this project, Danielle Miller, who was formerly my boss, pulled me in for this when they needed someone to serve as the project director, and it was an opportunity to get back into the library world and get back into this service, because this really became something I was passionate about while I was there and had tried as best as I could while I was in Santa Barbara to get and stay involved, but this really helped to push me back into the world. So, and also thank you for having me here and letting me come to speak about this. I know standards, woo, exciting, but hopefully, finishing up this document is very exciting. And as Will said, it has been a very interesting process. This is the first time I've been part of a project like this, and maybe I'll do it again, who knows. So again, the sort of going through the process, again, my name, my email address if you have any questions, and some introductions and thank yous. So again, as Will said, he's on the working team with Danielle Miller, and they have done really most of the work on this document. So they're the ones that, you know, with assistance from the advisory team, went through the previous 2011 standards and guidelines with a pencil, pen, you know, making changes, things that they wanted to move around, and then actually did the work of moving things around, editing, changing text, changing words, and then preparing drafts. And then I'm sort of there to help with that process, keep everyone on track and on schedule, and also to add the introduction to the actual document. And the advisory team members, so Adam Shapaniak with New Jersey State Library, Nancy, and he's representing the Northern Conference, Nancy Pack, who's the director for the Alabama Public Library Service, and she's representing COSLA, so the Chief Officers of State Library Agencies. Kim Charlson is here, President American Council of the Blind, and she's representing the American Council of the Blind. David Hyde, Chairperson, Library Services Committee Chairperson, representing the National Federation of the Blind. Melanie Brunson, Director of Government Relations, representing the Blinded Veterans Association. And Ava Smith, Director of Talking Book Program in the Texas State Library, and representing the Southern Conference. So you can see that the advisory team, as well as the working team, were group making, representing all the different groups, parts of the regional library, so that we could really get to make sure that the drafts and everything were distributed, and then comments, you had a common place that you could send comments to, and someone that you were maybe familiar with or comfortable with. And also want to thank ASCLA and NLS. So Susan Hornick, who was, when I started this project, the executive director of ASCLA and RUSA, and then her team, who took over after she retired this past April, Melissa Tracy and Leanne Wood with RUSA. And then, of course, Richard Smith, who's been our NLS representative, so helping us, again, to guide the project along. So a little bit of the history of the document. So the project started in the fall of 2015, where the working team and the advisory team were first formed. And all teams met for the first time in Boston at ALA Midwinter. And that's when they really did, as I mentioned, the first sort of looking through the document using the red pen to find where they wanted to make changes, moving things around. So that's where a lot of the real work happened at that first conference. And that was nice because they were able to meet in person, so really get to know each other, get to know the document from the 2011 version. I joined in April of 2016, and so, and prior to me joining officially, there was another conference, the NLS Biennial Conference, that I wasn't able to attend because of the times of my start and the, when the conference happened. But there were, again, presentations, and I think a lot of discussions. Some of you may have been there and been part of those discussions. And so all of that, those discussions there, came together to help with the what would become a working document that we would work on and would we would work on during ALA Orlando. So in June, we, again, the working team and I gathered together to look at all of the comments we'd received from emails in person at the conference in San Francisco to see what other changes we needed to make. And from there, the first draft was released in September of 2016. And so the first draft had, there were a lot of changes in that one, but some additional changes would come out in the second one, and that's what I'm really going to talk about, because the guidelines section, which is where the staffing section is located, that's where we made a lot of the changes between those first and the second document. So again, all teams met again at ALA Midwinter in January 2017, and then the second draft was released in March of this year. So that has been out for a couple of months now. Hopefully, as I said, some people have looked at it or glanced at it or read it several times, maybe, and so that we can have a sort of discussion about that. Yes, there will be a test. So next steps. So we're accepting comments. There is a Google form, but you can always email myself, Will, Danielle, if you don't want to use the Google form with your comments. I'm here June 6th at the Midlands Northern Conference. I was also in Santa Fe at the Western, thank you. I get the way that the states are divided up, I think, is tough. And then I will be at the ASCLA board meeting at ALA Annual, and that's where either I'll present the final version for them to vote on, or I'll just present a sort of update of where we are with the project. And as I said, October is really when the project is in, so if we don't come to a decision in June, at the end of the month at ALA Annual, then we'll do an electronic vote, so they will have time. And then between then in October, that's when we'll start to prepare the document for actual distribution. Okay. So I'm going to go through some of the major changes and read either this change section or part of the introduction. So I'll read aloud, and it seemed to work well at Santa Fe to actually stop after I read a section to have questions, so we were focusing on one area at a time. So I'll do that again. So this first major change in the second draft was because of comments we received about the NLS shell, quote-unquote, sections being removed. So this is from the introduction, page 7. One notable change is the deletion of all standards that dictate what LC NLS shell provide to network service providers, including those referencing the responsibilities of the NLS consultants. As stated before, and I'll interject here, as stated before is referring to before in the introduction, so not another document. These standards and guidelines are intended for the network service providers. Thusly, this document should only address areas that are under the network service provider's control and jurisdiction. Furthermore, NLS makes additional resources available to network service providers, such as the Network Library Manual, which describes the arrangements between NLS and libraries within the delivering services. Okay, so that's the first major change. I'll first see if there are any questions before I talk about the comments we received in Santa Fe.
Could you translate? Is that an absolution of like NLS? Does that mean you guys don't have to have any standards anymore?
No, so this is more saying in the previous standards there were interjected throughout statements that dictated what NLS shall provide to the network librarians. So the standards are really what the network library programs should what the services they should provide to patrons and how they, you know, perform that work. But there were also things in there that would say NLS shall do this for the network librarians. So this was before it was really throughout the document. And a lot of the work of the document was combining things that were like together instead of things being sort of separated throughout as well. Yes. Yes. Exactly. Yes. So that's where the network manual comes in, because that actually, that, I mean, that's a document that comes from NLS that says these are the things that we should do, rather than it being in a document that's for the network librarians and what they should do.
That's good, because, you know, we look up to you. If there aren't any standards, we have nowhere to look. So.
Yeah. Yeah, so this isn't, yeah, standards are still going to, will still be here. Any other questions about this section? So this was one of the sections that came up in Santa Fe, of because a previous draft that we sent out included in the appendix, it might have actually been a working paper and not one of the official drafts, but there was a section at the end of the guidelines that said it really just combined everything that NLS shall do in there. So we're looking at that one again because of comments we received, but are still trying to juggle with the fact that, as I said in here, and we wrote in the introduction, there are other manuals that dictate what NLS shall do that are more binding than this document is. So that's where we're sitting right now. We're still talking about this section, but okay. So the next is, again, the staffing model in the guidelines. And so this is, this first excerpt is from the actual introduction. And so then I have information about the actual, what the guidelines look like. So from the introduction, page 8. So in 2011, the guidelines section offered a fixed numeric system that recommended levels of FTE staffing based on the number of patrons served by the library. However, the 2017 revision acknowledges that such a method cannot be applied equally or effectively to such a diverse and constantly changing network. The new model presented in these guidelines is designed to address this reality by integrating both the fixed and flexible components that promote service-driven levels of staffing, yet protect a total compliant complement of FTE based on position-to-patron ratios. In this new model, network service providers are being offered concrete figures to justify staffing combined with the agility needed for managing an evolving service. And I'll go through the different, through the guidelines before we open up for discussion. So in the guidelines, there is 1.1 includes a list of typical functions of library operations requiring service resources. This section here, which is a list A through U, was actually in the first draft. So everyone should have seen this if you looked at that first draft. And it really lists just functions, job duties, things that exist in the, not just, you know, the LBPH library world, but in the library world, just in general. So in administration, acquisitions and processing, automation systems and infrastructure, IT, cataloging, children and youth services, circulation, collection development, maintenance and management, digital collections and resources, equipment management, facilities, operations planning and management, instruction, training and technical support, interlibrary loan, local book and magazine production, duplication on demand and special collections, patron registration and record management, public education, outreach and promotion, readers advisory, reference, research and planning, special library events and programs, statistics and data gathering, volunteer services, and interns. So it's a long list of different things that people do within a library, really. So if you think about it really broadly, that's what this list is. And then the next section, section 1.2, these are the categories for staffing. So this describes the job duties very broadly that someone could have using those list of things that people do. So A is a regional librarian, administrator, or director. And so in this one, we say that they should be the head of the regional library, should be a professional librarian possessing a master's degree in library and information science from ALA accredited program, who along with their support staff are required to carry out the functions of a network library. B, a professional librarian, so whatever you call that position, this person would, a position that require a master's degree in library and information science from an ALA accredited program. C, paraprofessional, so positions that do not require a library degree but may require appropriate degree certifications, training, or previous relative experience. And D, technical staff, material development or technology-based positions that require practical and specialized knowledge. And last, E, support staff. So these are positions responsible for helping network service providers to operate and support other staff activities associated with delivery of network services. So again, different ideas of what job categories that you would fit those other duties into. And then we get to the actual levels of staffing. So this is the last piece of that, the staffing guidelines. So in here, the levels of staffing, we broke it down again, as I said in the introduction, to a fixed and a flexible. So the levels is actually, let me jump to where I'm reading. Okay, and these are applicable to all network service providers. And that's another thing I should note. Network service providers, we replace that, so that would include anyone, regional libraries, sub-regional libraries, multi-state centers. So everyone who is providing service of to patrons, they are in that sort of big box now. So the fixed staffing. So this indicates categories of staffing identified by network libraries at an accepted level that are absolutely vital in fulfilling the functions of library operations, particularly if circumstances require these positions to perform multiple job duties. So these include one, FTE, regional librarian director with an MLIS, which we actually mentioned previously in the categories of staffing. And then for the second part, one FTE, reader's advisor, for every 2,000 patrons. So if you have 2,000 patrons, one reader's advisor. And there are different, we actually have some examples and then a document as well. B, the flexible staffing indicates a total number of FTEs based on patrons served and allocated in categories as needed at the discretion of the regional librarian or an administrative head. They assess which categories of staffing, how many of each position, and how positions can be adapted or altered as service demands change, maintaining a patron relation staffing level as a total FTE related number for the whole library demonstrates personnel and funding needs without limiting flexibility within operations. So this is one FTE for every 333 patrons. Okay. Any questions about that part of it? Concerns? Yeah. Mm-hmm. A full-time employee. Yeah. Equivalent, sorry. Yeah, thanks. Okay. Yeah.
So my question is, when you, and I beg your pardon for if I'm showing ignorance, but it's an interest to me, what is the definition of a regional library? Is that any collection, anywhere a collection's held, or is that at a certain level of collection? What is that?
I took it as the whether or not your library is called, like, so in Washington we are a regional library because we don't have any other. There's one library for the entire state, but so depending on how your library system is set up within your state, you might have regionals, you might have one regional maybe, or and several sub-regionals.
So the staffing that I'm looking at up there, yeah, actually doesn't apply to a sub-regional.
And that's one of the questions that we did get. And we don't have the I think we need to do either more research to find out whether how sub-regionals would operate and whether or not to be still or using these, as again, these are just guidelines, so they aren't the rule of how everything should run. But this still gives, even for sub-regionals who may not have a regional librarian or director, still give an idea of, you know, using maybe the categories of staffing and the typical functions. These are some of the duties that even in a sub-regional, you still have people doing this type of work, and you still have different categories that you would, you know, need to fill with whatever position. And I should also add here, we, in a previous draft for the categories of staffing, we had actual description names below each of the lettered points, but we found that people were feeling that was restrictive. And we don't want to, with this document, we don't want to say you need to have a volunteer coordinator. You could call that whatever, you know, that is, but as long as you have someone who is doing some type of volunteer services, whatever name you give that, you're still, you know, fulfilling the guidelines because you've, you know, checked off that typical function. And not that you have to fill in every single one of these functions, but this gives you an idea of someone in your library probably does something like that, even if it's 5% of their total workload.
One of the definitions of a regional used to be that you had at least one hard copy of every title in your archive. And I was wondering now with the virtual library and shelfless and everything, if that definition would change, or that requirement, I should say. Is that still mandated into what a regional is?
Well, do you know if that was a, is that a NLS definition, or?
I don't know, but I.
And I'm looking at the document right now to pull up the, so in the network manual, yeah. Other questions?
Well, maybe you can answer later.
Yeah.
Things are in flux. If that's the case, then Iowa is not a regional library.
Right.
It's changing.
Yeah, I think it would evolve, I would imagine.
So we, in the document, we've defined regional library as a library for the blind and physically handicapped individuals that are administered by a state library agency, public library, or agency for the blind, must be designated by LCNLS to administer services to the residents of a specific geographic area, typically a state, usually provides direct services to patrons. So, yeah, we didn't, and within our definition at least, but again, this is, the network library manual will be more of sort of the dictative how you would name your.
I just wanted to add to the benefit of everybody here who might be an AOC or a sub-regional, at the Santa Fe conference, this issue did come up, some concern about whether the standards could also have a module that talks about, and it does refer to the other entities, and what was the terminology that you're using now?
Network service provider.
Yeah, network service providers. But this whole issue did come up, and it might be that you might want to talk with Jane in San Francisco because she's one of the ones that felt some concern about this. But somebody would have to probably write something up and, you know, leave it as commentary for what you feel should be included.
Thank you. And that's a good point. If you do, and this, we mentioned this at Santa Fe too when this came up, that if you have some ideas of how this could be changed, either having another bullet point to include sub-regionals or give sort of that their unique circumstances, please write in to either myself or Danielle or Will, and we can use that. Because it's with this document as it went out, a lot of the language that you see in here are things that we received from other people too, sort of helping us to guide what areas that we needed to change. Any other questions? Okay, Well, that's good then. So we'll take these comments again back, and Danielle and Will and I are going to look at the document some more, and there will probably be other things going on the LBPH listserv as well as the ASCLA listserv, so please look out for those and provide us comments as well. Your feedback is really necessary to keep this project moving and so that we can wrap things up. Richard.
I think I mentioned in Santa Fe, you know, right now we're wrapping up the revised standards 2011, and they will be the standards of 2017, right?
Yes.
And basically, you know, we started this in 2015, 2014 was when we budgeted it. And actually approved the budget, and 2013 is when we actually put it in the NLS budget to support revising the standards. And some of the comments we got, especially from COSLA members, were maybe we would like to actually have best practices. Not everyone, just a few. We'd rather have best practices because standards are not being used as they used to be in the 90s and 2000. So that's just something we may want to explore in the future. Instead of having revising standards, maybe revise best practices for network libraries on providing services. And that was just a comment that it wasn't unanimous, but it was raised several times on for the future of the revising the standards. And that could be open for comments in a future conference. But anyway, the going into, we'll wrap these up, and then you have one year and 2 years to say, will we do this again? And that's right down in the future.
Okay. We'll end a little early then. Questions?